You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 29 October. We've got local private sector credit extension data due 8 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kamal Mepurani, horror pick and pay results. I think the market really is looking for Boxer, but I want to dig into those pick and pays. Steve Brooks from Borman Properties, results halve, another really, really tough period. And then Jonathan Cherry from Cherry Flava Media, spotting bad strategy that is so meaningless or won't work. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. CISA announces new standard for investment portfolios. A review of categorization was needed after Saab increased the offshore investment limits to 45%. That was back, in 2022. Business Day, PPC shares rocket as it flags earnings rise. The improvement is due to overall reduction in administration and other operating expenditure. Note, not revenue or sales. Morning markets, US was mixed. S&P up a fifth. The Nasdaq down a point, which is frankly a rounding error. Over in the east, mostly green, in fact all green. We got Sydney up 0.2, Turkey up 0.2, Hong Kong up 0.5%, and Tencent up 0.4%. Commodities mostly green. Gold 2,760. Brent is red at 71.58. Platinum 1,052. Palladium 1,234. That is a high for the year. Rand 1771, Bitcoin 71,200. Top 40 opening call, red open 65 points or 0.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kamal Mepurani, independent analyst. Kamal, appreciate the early morning time. The pick and pay results. I said in the intro there, I can't help thinking the market is really, this is all around the Boxer listing, which they reaffirmed will happen later this year, which I suppose means late November or maybe early December. But a tough set of numbers for pick and pay. Sean Summers did say a year ago this would take some time. He says it's a multi-year program. Volumes at company-owned stores negative, operating profit margins at 0.1 something percent. It's a bit of a horror show. Is it investable at this point, aside from Boxer?
Yeah, it's I like to call it dirty numbers or dirty financials at this point, because you have to wade through if you're really looking for those green shoots. I think you do have to commend the fact that there are, as you said, you know, certain aspects that look positive. So, for example, yes, revenue is going up, albeit at a very low rate. They still continue to lose market share to ShopRite, but then they have been able to control the internal food inflation as well to below CPI. So that's been good for them. I think that the key year for Pick and Pay is definitely going to be the transformation in terms of, or the recapitalization plan that they have.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the Boxer listing that's coming up, and that's looking to be in the region of about 6 to 8 billion. Pick and Pay will still hold a controlling interest, though. But having said that, that together with the rights offer will definitely go a long way to help them in terms of reducing that debt number of theirs.
And my sense is Sean Summers is a grocer to his core. Pick and Pay is in a really bad spot. If you're reading between the lines, it was just neglected, seems to be what he's saying. But my sense is he will probably get it right. It'll be a smaller Pick and Pay, but he will solve the problem, even if it'll take a couple of years.
That's what it seems like. And as you said, he guided, it's going to take a while to re-steer the ship onto the right course. But he's done it before. That's why he's been brought back in. He's also had to undo certain of the capital programs that were launched with the previous CEO that did not yield what the group was hoping. So I think it's going to be a difficult task in terms of, you know, going up against ShopRite. But as you said, it's probably more focused on getting a leaner Pick and Pay, a more efficient Pick and Pay, and in so doing, sort of restructure effectively. But I think maybe the size would be reduced, but the it's not going to become a micro market cap
Yeah,
effectively.
I take your point there. Quick last question on Boxer. The Boxer does look attractive. They had that giant presentation out a month or so ago. The Boxer deal, it looks like an attractive listing.
No, very much so. If for nothing else, I've spoken about this before when I said the market has been literally begging Pick n Pay to carve this out
Yeah.
so that they could actually get the true value out of Boxer. So that's being done now. We've seen the latest numbers that have come out yesterday for Boxer continues to grow at phenomenal rates. I mean, just compared to not even just on a top line, but on a profitable level, trading profit up 16%. Now, that's almost unheard of, I think, in the retail sector at the moment. So very, very positive. But I think it also just speaks to the current state of the economy. People are looking for, we want to buy good food, we want to buy safe food, but we want to buy it at good prices, and that's what Boxer is giving.
Yeah, I take that. We want to buy it. We want it at good prices, and Boxer does that. Quick look at the market caps. Pick n Pay, 12 billion. ShopRite, 157 billion. Staggering. Carmen Mepo and the independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting Steve Brooks, CEO of Baldwin Properties. Results 6 months ending August saw revenue off 28%, headline earnings down 57%. Steve, you listed Baldwin in 2015, but if I recall, the company's probably just over 20 years old. You started in the early 2000s. Is this one of the toughest periods you've had to trade through?
Yeah, the company started in 1996. We're touching close to 30 years soon. I've been through, this is the third economic cycle. And yes, it's been tough because I think we all forget we came out of COVID,
Yeah.
which seems like a distant memory, and then bang, straight into high interest rates. And yeah, I mean, one of our top leaders in this country said it'll take some companies 10 years to recover from COVID. Sure hope it isn't true, but he's quite an astute gentleman. But yeah, it's been a tough couple of months, very tough.
I take your point 100%. It was the pandemic. We had a brief blip of strong rand, low rates, and then it just turned really horrible again. You do mention that you're able to respond to demand. You can obviously manage costs internally, but also you can kind of build at the rate at which you're selling.
Yeah, look, we've got a lot of incentives running, which makes a big difference to our clients. But, fundamentally, you can do all sorts of ideas, but fundamentally, we need a I'm obviously watching the world economy, and I'm not an economist, is that, Canada cut their rates for 0.5%. I'm hoping that Britain comes out with 0.5%, and then hopefully we can follow.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm the only one that's that optimistic, but that's what we need.
Yeah, I think that September inflation at, 3.8 certainly could maybe twist the MPC's arm for a 50-point cut. The 0.25% we got in September is post your period end, but it is small. I mean, it's a nice confidence booster. Have you seen much increased interest?
No, there was no. The 0.25% is really wishy-washy, we're quite on the ground and we talk to people. The average client doesn't even mm-hmm. know that 0.25%.
Yeah. You're seeing more demand, or are you seeing more demand for perhaps the smaller and perhaps the slightly cheaper 1 and 2 bed apartments? I was thinking of a 3, but now when my sister visits, she could sleep on the lounge instead.
Yeah, look, we've always had a model where our ground floors are 3 bedrooms because obviously that attracts the families.
Mm-hmm.
And above it, we've always done 2s and 1s. And then now, we've also got to make sure we don't chop and change too fast. So our market has always been that. But it really comes down to, the affordability of the client. The consumer is getting hammered out there. I hear our governors and all the clever guys talking, but, on the ground, we can see it. It's getting tough out there.
Yeah.
We see it with the levies, the people that aren't paying their levies on time. And I believe the car guys are repossessing cars like crazy. 0.5% is what's needed, and I believe a 1% is needed, 0.5% now, then early next year, maybe 0.25% or something like that.
Yeah, we need to get prime to 10 or perhaps 9.5. Dr. Rulof Botha will tell us 9.5 is the proper rate. Selling prices, slight drop, is that in response to demand or is that more about your internal costs? Because you do talk around being able to manage some costs internally.
You know, I've got a team that I've put together over the last 28 years, you know. I'm not in the hiring and firing business. You know, I'm a very loyal guy. We've got good people that have good IP. So, you know, our overheads are what they are, you know, and if it gets worse next year, then obviously we'll have to look at it.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we're just going to try and tough it through and hopefully I'm in the right place. So
your annuity coming along nicely. This is something which you and I have spoken about a couple of times. It's fiber, it's some rentals, financial services, green living. That's starting to become meaningful, particularly in tough times like this.
Yeah, you know, I've got a mentor in a certain gentleman, and he asked me to set this up, and I listened to him. And, you know, Razik Ismail is a rock star. He's he's bright, he's young, he knows what he's doing, he's got a good team under him. Our ethos is to always make sure that our clients get good value out of what annuity we're doing. And it seems to be paying off. We want to build this into a big business.
We've spoken a lot around your green credentials, but you're also focusing on water. You're saving drinking water, potable water through your estates. You're also treating water in some estates. Now, that's obviously not for drinking and cooking, but it is a sort of an extra part of your green initiative.
You know, I've said it publicly. We've got one world. That's all we've got. You know, all the space people believe there's stuff out there in Mars or whatever. But, you know, we've got one world. Let's try and, you know, property developers are notorious for going in and wrecking things. And let's try and be a developer that touches the earth lightly and tries to do something. I've got a passion. I'm on the Green Building Council. Now we've got 11 six-star graded facilities, which is, as you know, tough to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're doing as much. I don't believe we can do any more. You know, people say you can always do more, but I believe we're really pushing it hard. The next big drama in this country, as you know, South Africa is a dry country.
Yeah.
So the next big drama is water. So we've seen it coming. You know, the government are struggling to keep up with a failing infrastructure. The next step we're going to look at is water storage. You know, storing into a facility that keeps our clients continuously going with water. But our grey water and black water harvesting is working. It's not easy, it's expensive, but we are trying damn hard to foresee the problems of the future.
We'll leave it there. That's Steve Brooks, CEO of Bourne Properties. Always appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. You're looking to buy a home? Certainly Bourbon have a bunch, and of course Kogra, but I mean, there's just a lot of stock out there. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Jonathan Cherry, founder at Cherry Flava Media. Jonathan, appreciate the time. You put out an email recently. You're talking around spotting a bad strategy. One of the first paragraphs refers to listed companies who do their, I don't know, biannual results presentation, talk about strategy, and it is, I mean, we're going to be polite here, I suppose, and say it's just nonsense. It's just wasting everybody's time. It is difficult, but folks far too often just really, they're not doing strategy. They're doing platitudes.
Yeah, right. And if you're an investor, a strategy that is presented by a board should be something that you use as your forward guidance as to how you would value that counter. You know, are you optimistic about holding on to the script, or do you feel like they're a little bit directionless? And exactly as you say, if you just do yourself a favor and go and download some of the investor presentations and carefully go through what they present to be as strategy, it's anything but. It's a wish list. It's generally planning. You don't necessarily get a sense that the organization has spotted an unbelievably compelling opportunity, which is future orientated. And then they have some kind of idea of what the approach is going to be to unlock that opportunity. And in many ways, that's one part of it. The second part of it, I suppose, is just the performance of those organizations over time. I was just having a look at some of the share performance of some of the big retailers this morning.
Yeah.
And you can really see, you know, how that performance is really being affected by this misunderstanding of what strategy is. And the guys who do get it are understandably doing really well. So it's not something that is just about presenting sort of smoke and mirrors to investors and hoping that they buy it. It has a fundamental impact on the performance of an organization.
It absolutely does. And often strategy is just the new hype word, which of course right now is artificial intelligence, AI. I see it literally everywhere. And I would say that 90%+ of the time, it's just someone played with ChatGPT and thinks that now they've got AI in their organization. It's not a proper sort of in-depth interrogation and working out what's the problem, how does this solve it, how does it move it forward meaningfully.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, AI could definitely be a tool which is used to optimize an organization for sure. But is it something that gives you a strategic advantage over everybody else?
Mm.
Sure, if you've found some positioning that no one else has got and you're able to maneuver into that space, absolutely. But as you say, you know, a lot of these technologies in particular run in hype cycles and everyone gets very excited about it. And I guess the challenge is you know, show me the CEO that's going to stand up and say, actually, we've had a look at AI and we're not going to waste our time with it. You know, that would be a very strong move to say something like that. And I haven't as yet seen anyone who's doing that. So I think it's pretty much like following the crowd. If everyone's moving that area, you don't want to look like an idiot and not be talking about that. So unfortunately, that's what often happens with things like AI.
Yeah, I'm keen. There's some CEO out there say, yeah, we had a look, AI, not for us. And oftentimes, I mean, strategy is, it would invariably be you've got a problem. And that problem might just be that you're not growing as fast as you or the market wants to be. It might not be a structural problem, but it really is taking that problem head on. It is hard. It can be complex. It can be painful for organizations to properly tackle it.
Right, because you've got to admit what your weakness might be. And it just in that statement, if you're not growing like the rest of the market, well, then you're not growing because customers don't see value in what it is that you're selling. So that's what the problem is. You know, what you're selling is not compelling. So go back until you find out what exactly is it that is, you know, what is the barrier that's restricting you from actually innovating? And go and find out what that is. And that often could be a mindset, or it could be the cultural dynamics that exist within an organization, which might be very comfortable with the status quo. Then you've got to go and address that issue. Just kind of putting a presentation together and saying, well, you're going to grow 10% year in year. Yeah, that's fine. But how are you going to do that? What is the critical issue that you actually need to address? And that's what strategy is. It's about putting a mirror up to your failings and actually saying, well, you know, what is it that's holding us back? And how can we apply strength into that opportunity? You know, how can we overcome the weakness by putting together a cohesive set of choices which really focus our energy specifically on that key leverage point that's going to allow us to unlock the opportunity into the future. And as you say, Simon, that is incredibly difficult to do because you've got to check your own biases, you've got to check your own thinking and really step away from your comfort zone and go into a space where you're very honest with yourself.
Two words there, focus and cohesive. The one thing I invariably find is that the longer the strategy sort of presentation takes, the less strategy there actually is. It should almost be an elevator pitch. I appreciate that the actual implementation is a long and windy road, but the sort of high-level description of it shouldn't require a half-hour presentation. It should be short, sweet, and very simple and very obvious how it works.
Yeah, exactly, because you're focusing all your efforts on one key leverage point. And I often come back to, you know, what is good strategy? Well, if you look at a Checkers 60-60, that's an example of good strategy, because what they did is that they understood the opportunity was in unlocking this idea of frictionless grocery delivery. And that's the motivating idea. And from that, you go and unpack what that then means. So what would need to be true in order for that to be realized? You don't necessarily have all of the answers right up front, but you've got an idea and a frame that you can start to construct. And then you can put all of your effort and your energies and resources into that specific motivating idea to enable it and to make it come true. And that's exactly it. You know, you've got to take a bet on the future. It's not about covering all the bases. It's about what is that key leverage point that we believe is going to unlock our future, and then hitting everything at that specific point and seeing what happens.
Yeah, 60-60, a gold standard globally for, as you say, frictionless grocery delivery. We'll leave it there. Jonathan Cherry, founder at Cherry Flavor Media. Appreciate the time.
That's all for today. We were chatting with Gerard Leroux yesterday from Capital Connect, talking Black Friday spending and its value to the economy and in particular to retailers. Are you planning your Black Friday buying? That was the question we asked. Half said only if the deals are real. 40% nope, skipping it. The rest said you can't wait. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb websites in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests, for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Medium-term budget policy statement.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.